Hey, Leanna, how are you doing?
I had a mid-cough, sorry.
Oh,
started just as we started recording.
Yeah, go ahead. You finish it.
I'm here. Yeah,
all right. Good news. Good news. The right wingies who are constantly going on about me on Twitter saying that I'm not relevant, they can't say that anymore because I've been trending since last night. At this point, it's like, I don't know, about 14 hours of trending, apparently.
Okay.
Now, this is why. I goofed. This is a good lesson for me not to respond too quickly while you're distracted, okay?
Well, yes.
I mean, okay, every now and again you need the lesson reinforced, but this asshat named Corey Morgan, who's always putting up right wing talking points that are just full of holes. Just
I don't know why you talk to people because they are out to collect gotchas.
Well, I usually get him is the thing.
Yeah, but what does that do? That just makes people see you talking to him raising his profile.
It allows people who don't know how to rebut the things he's saying, it allows them to see how to rebut them themselves.
Okay, but does that do any good?
I get comments from people saying thank you, so yeah.
All right.
Okay, I see your point, but yeah. Yeah. All right. So he puts up this this thing where he says that the Trudeau government started a thing yesterday where they're going to allow renters to use the credit history of renting to apply when they try to get a mortgage. Because previously, if you were a renter, you didn't have that. And if you've been a renter paying on time and stuff, that didn't play into your credit rating and it made it more difficult to get a mortgage and or made your interest rate higher. OK, so this is something the federal government is saying, well, we can't do very much. Imagine practically do almost nothing about the cost of the housing stock. But this is something we can do to try to ease the pain. Anyway,
is this part of their renter's bill of rights?
Yeah.
OK.
So the guy puts up that the average salary in Canada is $60,000. The average home in Toronto costs over $1.3 million. And so his point is that Trudeau's thing about credit rating. Trudeau thinks that helping credit rating is going to help people get into homes.
Okay, it'll help. It's not a panacea.
It's not a panacea, but then I was not paying attention enough, so I did a stupid thing. Instead of actually making the point I wanted to make, which is that, somebody, a single income earner, earning the average rate of $60,000, cannot, from scratch, no down payment, buy a home at the average price of $1.3 million. Okay, but then again, when has anybody in the last generations been able to buy a home on a single average income with zero down payment from scratch? It's like, people don't do this. When the average home is 1.3 million, that means there are homes underneath 1.3 million.
Okay, and let's face it, this whole argument, all the basics of this argument are wrong, but I don't want to derail. I can talk about why that conservative talking point is just wrong anyway.
Yeah, I should probably let you respond to this. So I, also, what else did other point did I make? Oh, that interest rate, that credit rating does affect your ability to get a good rate on a mortgage, right?
Of course it does. Yeah. I mean, things like having a salaried job that people don't have, so on and so forth, all that affects as well. The entire system's antiquated. It's not based on how people are actually working now. Everyone agrees with this, but these are private banks and private lenders setting these rules. The government can only do so much.
Agreed. And also, I would say almost all mortgages these days are dual income mortgages. They're not one person saying, hey, this is how much I make. Now I want a house that I can't afford. It's here's the aggregate income for the home. And here is, and I'm going to find a home that was is within the range I can afford. And I'm going to have a down payment. So his argument was specious. It was misleading on purpose.
As people on Twitter tend to make specious arguments.
So I'm going to read this because I'm going to take it on a chin, okay?
Okay.
Here was my response. Yes, you can get a mortgage for $1.3 million with $60K income because it's amortized over decades. And as long as you can afford the monthly payments, you can get a house. Most homes are dual income. Monthly payment rates are affected by credit rating. Now, my mistake there was you can get a mortgage for $1.3 million. No, you can't. You can get a home that is worth $1.3 million with 60K income. You can't get the mortgage for $1.3 million.
Well, so, still, probably not, but what's the big crime?
Well, and the thing is, no, you can't with 60K, but most applications are dual income. So it wouldn't be 60K.
This whole thing just doesn't seem exciting enough to trend for 14 hours.
Oh no, but because I was stupid. Like they finally got me. My guard was down and they finally found something they could criticize that I did.
So what? Your math isn't good. So what?
Well, I come at them from an intellectual point of view most of the time, and I critique and point out the holes in their thinking. In this case, the hole in the thinking was me because I stated my case wrong.
The hole in their thinking is their central premise that average income is what we should be basing affordability on, and it's not.
Okay, and I want to hear this, but let me just say yes. My statement was incorrect, and I've also learned something you learn when you give quotes in the media, or whatever, or when a journalist writes something that winds up being on wrong information. The retraction and correction never gets any attention,
and they'll forget.
Oh, that's what I know. I mean,
I've said things that are true that people hold against me for years on social media. It's utterly ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing I'm looking at, which is okay. So now this is going to go up there as my budgets balance themselves. Except in that case, Trudeau wasn't saying that. They take a piece of it.
But these are people that are advocating that trans people can't use the bathroom of their gender identity. So I fail to see how there's an apples to apples comparison in who did the biggest dumb.
Oh, there isn't. These people never make that. But here's the thing. Now, as I said, they can't say I'm not relevant because lots of people make goofs or speak poorly in tweets and don't get trending. And secondly, after I started making comments on the after the Hamas massacre in Israel, I lost like 500 Twitter followers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As of today, I'm back up to where I was. More people followed me as a result of this.
Well,
so I don't see, and this is just proof that in this day and age, you can't lose.
You lose and
you win.
You can lose by being female, not white, over the age of 40, so on and so forth, because nobody cares what the rest of us have to say.
Yeah, it's...
Unless you're so extreme, like unless you're some sort of traitor to... you know, something, unless you're saying something against a person they don't like, there's just certain people. The problem with social media is that it really isn't merit driven. It's all about driving people into extended enhanced states, either fear or rage, that aren't healthy to be in for long periods of time. There's a whole debate in my circles about whether, you know, the always on their phone generation of kids is having, you know, a substantially different childhood than previous generations, and whether that's the phrase rewiring their brain was used, and I don't agree with that. But it's undeniable that childhood and adolescence are radically different places than they used to be. And the fact that a bunch of psychologists and behavioral scientists and whatnot are fighting over this, just there's so much of what's going on right now that just makes me want to get a house in a swamp somewhere, preferably with chicken feet, and have the entire world just leave me alone. Can I get Instacart? Can I get Amazon? Good, I'm fine.
Wait, you want to have chicken feet?
You know the Baba Yaga?
Oh, the Baba Yaga, yeah.
Okay, I'm 46 years old, Ed. That's the only fantasy trope left to me.
All right, sorry. If I'd been drinking, that would have been a spit take. Well done. And just to wrap this up for me, before I get, I want your explanation about the thing, is that what it shows me is that there are people who like me and like my political stance and like my point of view who will back me even when I say something that I admit was poorly worded.
That was just clearly a brain fart. We all have them. If someone's standard is perfection, they're always going to get you eventually. That's something I really don't like about the media right now. Nobody can be perfect. I've read a bunch of things with celebrities and stuff, and they've said things, and I'm like, this is being made into something it just wasn't.
Slow click day. Now, I want to hear from you why the argument that the conservatives are making about the cost of housing, the average income, why this is all empty talking points.
Well, okay, because home ownership, there was a period of maybe 10, 15, 20 years where home ownership was the norm. It was after World War II when it was deficit financed and it only applied to white veterans. Point one.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of human history, people have rented rooms or lived, you know, as sharecroppers. We went from feudalism to industrialization. Renting is the norm. Renting for a lot of people makes sense. They move around a lot for work. They don't have the ability to do that lengthy 4-month process of selling your home and then, you know, buying a new one. They got to pick up and go, and they move a lot. And whenever you move, there are fees. You lose $10,000 to $20,000 every time you move, just on lawyers' fees and transfer taxes and so on and so forth, right? So renting is the standard of affordability. Home ownership is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Rent should be based on the living wage. And the living wage should be a minimum wage. Whatever the average wage is shouldn't be an indicator of affordability. If an average wage in an area allows you to buy a home, that makes the area, you know, attractive to people moving in. If that's the baseline, then that's one of the causes of inflation.
I'm listening. I'm making notes.
The average wage should be higher than the living wage. It just should be, because the average wage should allow people to buy a few extras, invest for the future, so on and so forth. The big problem we have, keep in mind, 60,000 is the average.
Yes.
Right? The average, meaning half of people are making less than that.
Yes.
Meaning, you know, those people are really struggling. And these are conservatives citing that statistic, because the conservatives like to appeal to people who consider themselves middle class. They may, in fact, not be middle class. They may be making over $250,000 a year, but they still consider themselves middle class. They're saying that for people making well over $60,000 a year, who want to complain about how much the renovations on their $2 million home are. That's
how expensive it is now to maintain a cottage in a summer home.
Yeah. That's what that messaging is targeted at. And a lot of those people are living based on intergenerational wealth. So they don't actually know how much things cost when you don't have that help. And that reliance on intergenerational wealth is a major, major social problem. And I saw this firsthand, right? Because when I came into TV, I came from Jane and Finch, you know?
The hood. Home,
like, well, you're not allowed to call that anymore.
I just did, but I know what you're saying.
Okay, but like I came from Jane and Finch. Nobody in my family owned a home. It was just not, it was not considered anything you ever even aspired to do. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. And I saw firsthand how the problems I understood were normal totally changed the minute I walked the door at 299 Queen West. And I never quite adjusted. And it negatively impacted me, my entire time I was there. I was always treated as the problem because I didn't speak in the correct code. And that is a major problem in business. It's a problem in media, especially in Canadian media, because there's a greater percentage of the media in the US because they've got black billionaires that is non-white owned. Now we're getting, you know, various Asian and South Asian people buying media in Canada. That's a good thing because it's a different perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we have an issue with this stuff that certain points of view, it's what I said off the top, certain points of view matter, certain points of view don't. And I know I shouldn't complain because I do have a larger platform than most people, but I do see it. I mean, they don't have to catch me in an arithmetic error, Ed. All they have to do is say, you're old and menopausal. You're past your prime. No one wants you. And that's it. Apparently, I'm not allowed to have an opinion on the economy.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing. It's such a microcosm of a microcosm. I mean, I get people telling me when I make comments they don't like, they say, you're not relevant. You've been relevant since the 90s. But that's not the same thing. And like my thing is a microscopic thing of what you're talking about.
Yeah, but you actually mattered enough that they felt that they had to refute you.
This is what I try to point out to them. Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, the slurs they throw at trans people or at black people, or, I mean, it's awful for both Jews and Muslims right now. It's just bad. They're really good at just putting everyone against each other. They are using the problems of the left against the left, and they're really good at it. Now, it doesn't take much to be really good at it because, you know, center left, far left infighting, you watch it happen every day. It's ridiculous. The moral purity standards that are required to be allowed to have an opinion, it's absurd. It's not good for us. It is unhealthy. This is unhealthy. Stop.
The left has always been, to some degree, a circular firing squad. It's just how many people are in the firing squad that changes. But they're all, you know, because the right wingers, they circle their wagons and shoot outwards. The left circles its wagons and shoots inwards. And this has been forever.
I read a thing a couple days ago that voters under 30 are leaning conservative because they don't like the Trudeau position on Gaza.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting is they didn't go to the NDP, who's been pushing hard on Gaza. They're just going to the enemy of their enemy.
Yeah, this is always a good movement in politics. The thing that drives me crazy about this, I don't want to get too into it, but it's, okay, you don't like the Liberal government's position on Gaza. Okay, here's the thing. The Liberal government's position on Gaza is freaking meaningless because it doesn't have any influence on what's going on over there. The Liberal government's position on domestic policies, that's important. Their position on something going on a world away that we have no influence on, not really relevant. The policies that will affect you day to day, and especially younger people, because we're at a point now where some people want to take the economy into a place that most of those young people would not want it to go. They're just, I mean, young people are never politically sophisticated anyway.
That's not true. Some are.
Some, sure.
It's a perspective. It's a core values disconnect. I don't know if you want to go to break and come back and talk about this or continue, but.
Yeah, you're right. We should go to break.
Okay, that was an affirmative. I didn't think anything was required from me. My bad.
All right. We and I got a cough because you you made me laugh too many times. Gonna go to a break. I'm going to cough up a lung. Maybe I should give up the cigars, and we'll be back. Okay. Back we are. And Leanna, you were talking about a core value disconnect.
Yeah. See, there's two what we call schema or framings on things like foreign policy or anything, any big problem. You can buy in, you can agree to participate to try to reduce the amount of harm done. That's one way of looking at it. So us being involved and participating and therefore having influence means less bad happens, even though we do now opt into responsibility for the bad that does happen. Make sense?
Yeah, all right.
The other way of looking at it is, nope, just opt out so that none of the bad is your fault, even though more bad may happen. The question is, who gets blamed for the bad as opposed to how bad it gets?
Fair enough.
Right. The pro-Palestinian protesters are subscribing to the latter theory that we don't want blood on our hands. The government and the various governments that are traditionally allies with Israel are going, if we walk away, they'll just get their weapons from Korea or China or somewhere like that.
And then we have zero influence
and
over
then
their policies.
And then we have no influence, and then it will get so very much worse because there is absolutely no reason for them to show restraint now. And so if we lose the governments currently playing what they call, smart power politics, they can't do anything. It's influence, right? There's no power. There's influence. If we get governments that come in, I mean, anyone who thinks things will be better for the Palestinians under Trump, I have no idea.
Oh my God.
I really think they're underestimating the risk of Trump. He's the guy that moved the embassy to Jerusalem, very possibly irritating the conditions that led to October 7th in the first place.
Trump has no, he thinks, he sees anybody who isn't white, European heritage as vermin. Like, you think he cares? He doesn't even care about white people in the United States. You think he's going to care about Palestinians? Like, are you out of your frigging mind?
Well, the point is, when he had the opportunity to, he didn't. He was one of the, and I don't believe Trump was pro-Israel. I think he was just pro-break things to make a lot of noise.
Well,
I don't think that what he did ultimately benefited Israel in the long run.
He is not pro-Israel. He's pro, I want to get the evangelical Christian vote.
That's right.
Evangelical Christians, people think, isn't it great how they support Israel? Well, maybe not if you're a Jew, because the reason evangelical Christians support Israel is because Israel, in order for for Jesus to come back, Israel needs to exist so it can be destroyed, setting the circumstances for Jesus to come back. So they only support Israel because for them to be happy, it needs to be there to be destroyed. And then Jews won't get the rapture. They'll be stuck on earth, like hell on earth, for 1,000 years. You know what? Thanks. That's not the kind of support Jews want.
Look, here are the facts. The vast majority, large majority of people believe Israel has a right to exist. The Palestinian people deserve right to safety, security, and freedom. That's the vast majority. That is the popular opinion. That is the Overton window, right? Poll after poll after poll says that's the mainstream opinion, right?
Yes.
But you go on social media and that's not the loudest opinion. You see one very loud faction saying, you know, Israel is illegitimate, genocide, anybody who believes in Israel's right to exist loves dead babies. And then you have the other side going, Israel did nothing wrong. They're just defending themselves. Those are both extreme views. And I think that some people think they have to have an extreme view to be authentic. And that's not true.
Yeah. Yeah. You just nailed it. You just nailed it. That is actually what I think these people think is that you, if you're not extreme, then you're a fence sitter. And they hate people who are moderates more than they hate people who are completely opposite to what their values are.
Yeah, they think that the only time someone is saying something true is when it's extreme.
Yeah, it's like people who say that, well, Trump is more honest because he says what he's thinking.
Yeah.
No, what he's saying is dishonest. Just because he says things without a filter doesn't mean that he's honest.
Well, that just says something about the internal self-talk of the people that hold that view, right? Because I know I don't. My honest opinion on things tends to not be extreme. You know,
yeah.
I'm not I see both sides, but saying you're a first principles thinker is ruined now, but that used to be what you called the way I think, you know, but I'm discovering, I'm being reminded of late how not typical my structures are. And there's a reason for that, right? I have to be more with it. I have to be more conscious than the average person because of various things. Part of it is I do believe having a responsibility, being in the media, even in a teeny tiny form, I do believe that my primary job is to deliver facts to people, not what I think they should think.
And maybe on that note, we should go to a break and come back because I got something to add to that.
Okay.
All right. Back after this, talking about, well, I'm not going to tell you. You want to know? Keep listening. So on the point, Leanna, of telling people what you want them to believe, not what's true, let's talk a bit about Pierre Poilievre, because he just got a major endorsement. I don't know if you saw this.
Who, Alex Jones?
Alex Jones.
Yeah. Now, okay, this is fallacious, okay? This is fallacious reasoning. I admit my emotional response is yikes to Alex Jones endorsing Poilievre. I admit that this makes me think that Poilievre is far worse than I thought. Now, that's fallacious reasoning.
Yes, agreed. Charles Adler, former right-wing conservative who moved right to the middle because he didn't move.
Politics moved around him. He's very staunchly like red Tory still.
Yeah. So he puts it this way. Well, Alex Jones tweets, been following this guy for years and he is the real deal. Canada desperately needs a lot more leaders like him. And so does the rest of the world. And it's Pierre Poilievre. And Charles Adler says, Alex Jones was ordered to pay $1 billion to Sandy Hook families for falsely claiming the 2012 school shooting was a hoax. He's now claiming COVID vaccines killed 20 million worldwide and the world needs leaders like Pierre Poilievre. The thing is, most of the time, you wouldn't want an endorsement from a lunatic like Alex Jones. The problem is, the fact is that the people, the cohort of voters that Poilievre is courting are people who like Alex Jones. So while this would sometimes, otherwise, you know, in a sane political environment, which we haven't been in a while, this would have been a, like a, not a kiss of death, but maybe a hug or something. But now it's unheard of.
I think we have to amend that. Sorry for interrupting, but it's not that people like Alex Jones. Even people who listen to him think he's a disgusting pig of a person.
All right.
They like that they like what he represents. They like being able to say whatever irresponsible thing comes into your head. And this is something that we have to deal with. There is a serious problem, particularly in men, about feeling unheard. And this is hijacking reason because it's, you ever heard the emotional elephant, the rational rider theory?
I have, but for those who haven't, let us hear it again.
This came from a guy named Jonathan Haidt, who's in trouble now because he was the one that said, you know, teenagers on their phones all the time, maybe that's not good. But he talked about the fact that everybody is our what we think of our reason. That's the rider on top of an emotional elephant. And yes, for the most part, the rider guides the elephant where it wants to go. But if you ever think the rider is actually in charge, wait until that elephant stampedes. And that's a really good metaphor to think of the relationship between our intellect and our emotions. And so many I'll say non-athletically prioritized men. That's the best way I could come up with it.
That's
I'm glad
very
you found
good. I
that
like that one.
amusing. But many non-athletically prioritized men think that, you know, they aspired to be Vulcans, you know, Mr. Spock from Star Trek. That is not logical. It is impossible to have purely logical reactions to things, and purely logical reactions to things tend to read as sociopathic. And so, unless we factor in, you know, the fact that our emotions do happen faster than our reason, they do impact our thinking to a really inconvenient degree, but that, you know, it's not logical to deny it's there. Unless we recognize that our opinions on things are going to be skewed, our perspective on things is going to be skewed. We really have to recognize when we have an emotional reaction to things. But what I'm hearing from a lot of men is, why bother? No one cares. They say, open up and show your emotions. And then when I do, they say, not like that. And to a guy like that, a guy like Alex Jones, a guy like Joe Rogan, a guy like Elon Musk, even though they're disgusting, even though they disagree with everything they're saying, they seem like beacons of hope.
Yeah, I mean, well put and well illustrated for those who don't can't figure out these guys are asshats. They're clearly asshats. Why are there people cheering for them? Why do they have so many friggin' cheerleaders? And you just laid it out why. I think there's the other end, which we've also talked about though, which is it isn't that people love, for example, Trump. It isn't that they think he's actually telling the truth. It's that he pisses off the people that his supporters like seeing pissed off. He
It's
pisses
not.
off the people that the people with a with grievances see as their enemies, as their targets. So it isn't that Trump is so wonderful. It's that they just like that he pisses off the people they want to see get pissed off.
Let's face it, there's no single profile for a Trump voter, the same way there isn't a single profile for a conservative voter. You know, there's a lot of people planning to vote Republican slash conservative next election just because they've been convinced that Trudeau slash Biden is evil incarnate.
Yeah, you know what? To be, I think you have to be somewhat halfway to that base before you can be convinced that someone is not wrong in their policies, that someone is not, doing something, taking the policies in a direction you don't personally approve of, but that they're actively evil, that they're actually trying to destroy, fill in the country blank. That this used to be, I think their policies sucked. It's not good for the country. Now it's they're treasonous, they're traitors, And they are beholden to China, though there's zero evidence for it and much evidence against it. And they're destroying our country. And so there's this crazy hyperbole. It's like, no, you know what? Trudeau or Biden, neither of them are interested in destroying anything. Are they interested in a vision of their countries that you don't share? Yeah, no doubt. But that doesn't mean they wish harm on the country. They themselves believe this is the best route for the country, and they were elected by enough people to put that vision forward.
The ironic thing is we can get a lot of perspective from the recent funeral of Brian Mulroney. Rest in peace.
Yes.
Because I remember when Mulroney was prime minister and people were saying he was going to destroy the country.
Yeah.
And you can see how history was much kinder to him than the headlines were. I mean, I remember political cartoons from the time that Mulroney was in office blaming him for acid rain coming out of Michigan because of free trade, because that makes sense. But he put in the GST and it destroyed the Conservative Party. He put country over party because the country needed a revenue stream. And, you know, nobody liked him at the end of his tenure. But now, it gave me real hope that people from all wings of politics took the time to be decent, even though, you know, the color on his jersey, so to speak, wasn't the right one for a lot of people. They found a way to be decent. They found a way to connect as a human. And the overall sentiment regarding Brian Mulroney is he got the big things right. And I frankly think that that's how Trudeau's going to be remembered in history too. He's made some real messaging gaffes. And his personal life has become far too much in the spotlight. That's not fair to him. He didn't cause that. You know, that it's invasive. I don't like that element of politics. He got the country through COVID much better than a lot of countries in the world. Canada did better than average during COVID. That should count. You know, everybody was screaming that there was going to be a recession. It didn't happen. That should count. There are pretty major things. The CERB worked really, really well. And the conservatives were against the CERB. But because of these little things, because of these messaging things, because people think he's not like us, for some reason, they don't want to give him any credit for the things he's done right. And that something is getting people to vote against their best interests.
Well,
and I have no, you know, I don't owe Trudeau nothing, but I do think that the Canadian people deserve a chance to vote next time truly informed. And right now, I don't see them getting that.
Well, the thing is, yes, but there is some obligation on voters to seek out information. The problem is,
it's hard, though.
Well, find something reliable. And, you know, why do people vote against their interests? It's that that saying, I think it was Russian, that the trees vote for the axe because the handle is made of wood. And there's the Janet Jackson principle in politics. What have you done for me lately?
Well, that's the thing as well, though, that people have a skewed view of what government can do.
They think government on all levels can do anything that it wants.
While still screaming about fascists.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy town. But yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, let's face it. It's cool to call someone a fascist, right?
Well, because then it means you are not a fascist. So it reflects well on you Even though you don't even really know what a fascist
Well,
is.
but we also have two generations now of people who are told work hard, get good grades, take on a bunch of college debt. This is how you win. And now they realize this is not how you win. They were taken for a ride. So I kind of understand why they want to find some external source of blame for that so they don't feel like they ruined their own life.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's always better to believe that there was somebody actively working against you, because then the thought is, well, if that person's been actively working against me, all you got to do is remove that person or that party.
That's right.
And people won't be, and that opposition to my life won't be there. And it's a convenient, tidy way to think, and is like most things that are tidy ways to think, completely wrong. But we have to go to a break.
Okay.
All right. I had something else I want to talk about. Oh, you know, this is very brief, but it's kind of a microcosm of the world and where we're at now. Can I tell you about it?
Sure.
So I went to the service station this week because the car needed windshield wiper fluid. So I opened the hood, putting in the windshield wiper. The hood's open. Let me check the oil while I'm here. And I go looking by the squeegee thing for paper towel that was always there. So you could check your dipstick. And there isn't any. And I go inside and say, can I get some paper towel? We don't give out paper towel. I said, okay, could I have some so that I could check the dipstick? And they go look around. They give me like a one piece of paper towel. Now, we're now conditioned to accept that there's no paper towel there. Bring your own. Now, that we were previously conditioned to accept the paper towel is there. Do your own window washing, right?
Right.
Before that, the understanding was the service station person would do your windshield and check under your hood. And then they and fill the car. Then it became that you filled your own gas, but sometimes they would still check under the hood. And now, and then it was, now do your own windshield. Here's the materials, do your own windshield. And at this point, it's screw you. The squeegee is there, but we're not giving you anything to help you out looking at the oil or whatever. They keep, and we keep taking it. It's like when I was driving someone, I was like, hey, gas, it's only $1.56. And I slapped myself and said, what do I mean a dollar only?
Yeah.
Only. It's way too high. But the we're conditioned. They slowly, you know, it's like the false story about the frog in the boiling water. That mm-hmm. if you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. If you put it in room temperature water and turn it to heat slowly, it will roast itself to death, which isn't true. But the image of the idea that slowly increase the temperature and we acclimate to the new temperature, they increase it again, they acclimate. This is what's happened with so many things. They've just nickel and dimed us. And no wonder people are so pissed off, even nickel and dimed. Like you go to buy a chocolate bar and the price is more than it used to be. And the size of the chocolate bar is less than it used to be. Potato chips, it's almost all air. Like we're conditioned to accept these things in steps until we get to the point where we are now, which is what the hell?
But keep in mind, you're talking about something I talked about on, It's Not Therapy this week, the anchoring and adjustment heuristic.
Yes.
But keep in mind, do you remember when everything got bigger? I remember when potato chip bags got bigger and pop cans got bigger and snacks at the movies got bigger. It happened in my lifetime.
The whole supersize phenomenon?
Do you remember that when it was more cost effective for them to give more products? It was actually the manufacturing that cost them more money.
Yeah.
So they upped everything. It had nothing to do with whether that was an appropriate serving size. It was the ideal price point for the company. And now the same thing is happening. And so you can consider that, I mean, okay, the price is still higher, but this is not the first time it's happened. And yes, the thing about the gas prices of, oh, it's cheap. That's the, we set a subjective anchoring point, and then that influences all our subjective thinking on a topic. Which
well,
is
it's
why,
how we determine value.
Yeah, I mean, if you see something that's $10 regular price, and then you see a very similar item that's $10 at 50% off, which are you going to get?
Well, the idea is if you get the thing at 50% off, you're getting $20 worth of
That's
product
right.
for $10.
That's right. That's how it works. And marketing companies, they do this to us all the time. And governments do this to us. Your business, the company you work for, does this to you all the time. Because I know if everybody's doing it, you're just going to get exhausted and eventually give in. And that's okay. You know, the best thing a person can do is not what we call min-max life. That's a gaming term. It's, try to just absolutely optimize everything. If you're trying to optimize everything, you're going to feel constantly taken advantage of. You got to sort of figure out what's enough for me. You know, if you go in going, this is, I do some research, see what something costs. All right. This is what I'm willing to pay. And you go in and you pay that. That's a win. It doesn't matter if you see it cheaper somewhere else.
All right. Can you just define the word optimize?
Well, people try to get perfect, right? People try to make no mistakes, get maximum returns, get minimum penalties. And it is impossible because we have to make too many decisions based on incomplete information.
Well, that's an absolute fact. That's a whole other topic, but you're right. That seems why I like having you here. You can explain these complicated things in ways not so complicated, because a lot of complicated things, once you get down to the core of them, aren't that complicated. A lot of the discussion around it is made to sound complicated, so it does confuse people, baffle them with BS.
See, but people find that boring, right? People,
I don't.
This is work. I don't want to. I want somebody to be angry at, and I get it. But for me, being angry is exhausting.
Well, yeah, then you get angover. You use so much energy being angry that eventually you're like a deflated balloon.
Yeah, I just can't be angry all the time. I can't. It doesn't make me feel good. And they've actually found that venting may not be as beneficial as they used to claim it was. It can actually make you more angry.
Yeah,
but
I read that about anger rooms and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is that we see these articles and these broad strokes. Everybody's different, right? Everybody's physiology is different. Everybody's baseline state is different. And what I don't like, the reason, you know, I started doing mental health science reporting with It's Not Therapy is because so much of this stuff is so broad strokes that it actually misleads people. And so people spend all this time running around trying to do what's healthy and keep feeling defeated because then an article comes out, oh, coffee's bad for you. Coffee's good for you. Coffee's so-so for you. Oh, coffee's back to being bad for you again. These are fairly small studies that are still in the process of peer review. Someone put out a press release and some newspaper covered it. Overall, the basics don't change, you know? They don't. There's no quick fix.
Well, and the basics that don't change also is how much time we have in every show.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, we're going to close. Listen to Leanna on It's Not Therapy this week. Anyway, every week. Very, very interesting stuff. Some stuff that might seem complicated on the outside. It's like, wow, that makes a lot of freaking sense. So check out It's Not Therapy on all podcast platforms. Leanna, are you ready to do what you do to bring the proceedings to a close?
I am.
All right. Do it.
Bye-bye.